Good morning, everyone. My name is Don Slade, and I'm a member of the Freethinkers Committee, and welcome you today. Before we get going, I'd like to talk about what we're going to do in the next couple of weeks for the Freethinkers. But if you're curious of why we're set up as we are right now, tomorrow night we have a big dinner here at the church. So this is why we're crunched into a small space this morning. On March 5th, Frank Alcott, who is the director of the Moat Marine Laboratory, will come, and he wants us to think about this, and I think it's an excellent thing to think about even beforehand, is how do you choose between the economy and the environment? And how do we create a economic development without destroying the planet? I think that's really going to have it would be an interesting program. And then March 19th, Andy Blanche, who is a peace activist and a director of religious tolerance, was going to talk about political reconciliation between two warring parties, that being the Palestinians and the Israelis. These two topics have a wide range of opinions, as the topic today does, the economy. Ideas in the economy have been been going around Washington for the last year or so, and there's no way of an agreement on it. This question is, how does this economy affect us today and why? Our speaker today is Lauren Rudd, who will help us frame that question and come up with some answers, we hope. Lauren has four decades of experience on Wall Street as a research analyst and a portfolio manager. And he's a national syndicated columnist for the past 20 years. On every Friday, he's in the business section of the Herald Tribune. And the reason that I started reading him was that the comics are in the back of that section, so you keep reading the front part. And his article this morning, if you haven't looked at it, is really worth something to read. It's quite funny. He has an interesting sense of humor, and I've just discovered his writing and his personality, speaking personality, seem to be the same. He also is on Channel News 6, and he does analysis of key issues and how it affects the 2010 election. He's a partner in Day Haggard Asset Management, and he's also their chief economist. Please welcome Lauren Rudd.
Good morning. You know, when I was, I looked at the website of the previous speakers, and I noticed most of them have a religious bent. You're not going to get that this morning. There is no religious bent to what I do. On the contrary, it gets a little rough around the edges sometimes. What I would do, I teach economics, I teach investment analysis, and I normally lecture about Wall Street because that's what I know. That's the only thing I really know. But today's lecture is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be on the economy. There might be a few little things about investing sort of put into it, and if you want to ask questions afterwards, I can answer questions on the economy. It's too bad I'm not going to be here for that talk about the environment, because I discussed yesterday in a class I'm teaching economics the merits of pollution and the cost of pollution on the environment. And you know, I'll give you something to think about. People say, well, the polluter should pay. And there was a paper written by I forget his last name. In any case, he pointed out that maybe, you know, if a plant is polluting with smoke, maybe you should move the people away from where it's polluting, because that might be a cheaper option for the economy. Just cutting out the smoke altogether with, say, a scrubber in a coal plant is that the best solution? Maybe yes, maybe no. The thing is that this paper has been endorsed by both parties, and yet you can't get anything through Congress. Think about that sometime. Any case, what are we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to say, hey, the economy is not where we hoped it would be. The world is not where we hoped it would be, and times are a little bit difficult around the edges. So There are some critical decisions that have to be made, and there's some critical topics that need to be discussed. They are discussed, but government support of bailout programs, that usually gets people all excited. Taxes, that definitely gets people all excited. Interest rates, inflation, employment, strength of the dollar, deficit and national debt, these are all topics that really aren't difficult. The problem is Washington can't decide what the heck they want to do, why they want to do it, where they want to do it, or who they want to do it to. So what we've seen, and you say we don't learn. As human beings, you would think that we would be a little bit more intelligent than we are. We don't learn because look at the crises. We had the banking crisis in the 1980s. We had the market crash of October 87. That's what brought my column on, by the way. My column began in July of 88, and it took me that long to convince the Trenton Times, I was living in Princeton, New Jersey at the time, to convince the Trenton Times to allow me to write a column, because they said you have no experience. Well, July 2nd, 1988, they gave me a three-month trial, one column. Today I write for papers around the country. I have a readership of about 6 million people, and I write six columns a week. Only one appears in local paper. The other five you have to get on my website. Papers started cutting back, and I finally said, okay, the Market View, which is my daily column, only goes on the website. We had the savings and loan bailout. After that, we said, hey, we learned our lesson. It won't happen again. Right. Long-term capital. If you're not familiar with long-term capital, here is a company with two Nobel laureates on the board of directors, and they almost brought the economy down. What happened was Mr. Greenspan, who was the head of the Fed at that time, brought in the major investment banks and said, hey, long-term capital is a major problem. If they cannot cover their shorts, we are going to go down. I want each of you banks to put up the money. We're not going to use taxpayer dollars. Good point. And bail them out. Every investment bank put up money, except one. Bear Stearns said no. Mr. Kane thumbed his nose, walked out. I don't make this stuff up. I couldn't make it up. Now, go forward a few years. Bear Stearns is in trouble. Guess what happens? Wall Street has a long memory. We're not bailing you out. You're on your own. That's why they were sold for 10 cents on the dollar. Actually, they were sold for less than that, but the Fed got nice. We had the dot-com bubble. Once again, we're in trouble. Once again, we're promised it's not going to happen again. And now we have the housing bubble, the housing meltdown, the toxic subprime securities. What you're seeing today, as I was telling this gentleman before the talk, we have been nailing ourselves to the wall for the last 8 to 10 years, and now we realize it hurts. The problems you're seeing today, they didn't come because Obama took over. They didn't come 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They were in the making for the last 10 years. And if you take my economics course, I go through and I point out to you exactly how this happened. Don't have time to do it today, but take my word for it. When you fight a war, and I'm not making moral judgments on the war, I have my own opinion of that. I happen to think it's wrong, but that's not the issue. The issue is the country made a determination to go to war. And there's no other word for it. We went to war. You can fund that in one of three ways. And I've written this, I've talked about it for a couple of years. You can fund it with increased taxes, you can fund it with deficit, or you can fund it with cutting social programs. We didn't cut social programs and we didn't increase taxes. On the contrary, we lowered taxes. In a minute, I'll show you what the result of that was. Now, What did we do? We did it with deficit spending. All of a sudden, people are standing up saying, hey, you're mortgaging our children. Their children. Actually, we're not. It's way overblown in terms of effect. Right now, for those of you who read my material, I'm a firm believer in what we call the saltwater economists, the Paul Krugmans of the world. The stimulus package is half of what it should have been. And I'll give you a slide on that in a minute. But when you're going to use deficit spending to fund a $1 trillion war, and by the way, that's what it's cost us to date, $1 trillion, that's the price you pay. Okay, the economy. The economy's got a few problems. No argument. So who do you blame? The administration? Congress? Investment banks? Hedge funds? The Fed? Actually, they all are to blame. But remember, we put the administrations in office. That's our fault. The Fed, Alan Greenspan, was a lousy economist before he became chairman. He was a lousy economist when he was chairman. And guess what? He's still a lousy economist. On page 386 of his book, you can go back and check it, 386 or 326, I forget, he wrote, and I quote, I paraphrase, I can't quote it, I can't remember it anymore, getting a little old. The large banks will operate in a manner that's in the best interest of the public. And he's a quote, and usually I bring the book with me. I even wrote that in my column. He has lived to regret those words. We've lived to regret those words. Okay. I have the power. I usually have my computer in front of me. I don't have to read the screens. Has the current administration made progress? For those of you who are rampant on the right, you can pummel me when we get out of here with tomatoes and eggs if you wish, but let's look at some facts. They did stop us from sliding into an economic abyss. Now, if you don't believe me, here's a book I recommend you read. It's called The Return of the Master, bestseller list. In there, he describes a little bit of a meeting that took place between the Fed and Congress, which basically told them the following. And this has been corroborated by several different people. We were hours away from a total collapse of the economy. When I say total collapse, I don't mean things are a little rough around the edges. I mean the banks don't open, the insurance companies don't open, your credit card doesn't work, you can't get cash, and when the stores run out of groceries, that's it. Does hunting and gathering mean anything to you? That's about where we were coming. Why? Because in the old days, when you had a run in the banks, what happened? Well, people got their passbooks, and they went in front of the bank, they lined up, said, give me my money. Doesn't work that way anymore. We're in a digital age. What happens is banks get runs electronically. They were losing $280 billion an hour. Yeah, you didn't know that. They don't publish this in the front page of the Herald Tribune. As much as I try to get them to. I don't work for the paper. I'm just a columnist. But it's described in detail in this book. Basically, the Fed went to Congress and said, you pass TARP. We don't care how much. We don't care what the money goes for. That's not the issue here. The issue is, if you don't show support for the U.S. economy, we are in trouble. Because the money market funds were losing money so fast they couldn't count it. That's why TARP got passed in a hurry. And by the way, people say, well, it didn't work. It did work. A lot of it, there's a number of programs I show in my economics class. I have a sheet. It's two sheets of programs that have been passed by Congress. What people refer to as a bank bailout, that's pretty much been paid back. The only people who have not paid it back is an insurance company, and they are probably never going to, you're never going to see the money from them. That's sunk cost. We rescued the banks, we reduced foreclosures. Foreclosures have a ways to go. The difficulty is when you sell a house to a person who cannot afford it, they're going to go into foreclosure. I quote a story, it goes back a couple years now. A lady came in, I got the actual facts. She was a hairdresser, she wanted to buy a house. She had an income of something like $35,000. And the mortgage broker said, I can solve that problem. He put a one in front of the three. 6 months later, she can't make her mortgage payments. Are you surprised? Now, I believe everybody should be able to own a home. Everybody should have a living wage. There are a lot of things I believe in that aren't going to happen. But if you make $35,000 a year, you're not going to have a $350,000 house. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. It never has and never will. Economic team, I'm a little distressed by a couple members of the team, but it's better than what we had in the previous administration. There's a lot of ways of looking at the economy. I'm going to take you through a little bit of technical stuff. Okay? So bear with me. I just want to show you how you can look at various indicators and see, is the economy really, if you'll pardon the expression, ladies, going to hell in a handbasket? No, it's not. Actually, if you saw the unemployment numbers this morning, the unemployment rate is down to 9.7%. Is 9.7% good? No. We used to think that full employment was 5%, 4 to 5. Wait a second, Lauren, that's 4 to 5? What about zero? No, we never have zero unemployment. We have what's called frictional unemployment. Frictional unemployment is because people changing jobs, people coming in the workforce, leaving the workforce. It used to be that full employment was 4 to 5%. Well, here's Lauren's theorem number one for the morning. The new full employment rate is going to be about 7%. Why? Very simple. The jobs in this country have shifted. We are no longer a manufacturing economy. Remember the days, think back to when you were younger in your 20s, we had three domestic automobile manufacturers. They sold 70 to 80% of the market. They produced, you know, a middle class, essentially. That and Levitt Homes, anybody remember Levitt Homes? They produced the middle class. Those days are gone. Now it's chip manufacturing, and the most important thing in this economy is innovation. Technology and innovation is what we produce now. That requires college education, that requires graduate school, that requires a whole different level of workforce. Therefore, until the manufacturing type workforce, which is you and me, dies off, and a new generation, you know, those kids that in what, first grade, who are using a computer better than you can use it, when that takes place, we have a new kind of workforce, new technology, and the economy really takes off. Our days are gone, folks. You know, on the ranch, no more. Okay, when you look at the economy, and if you don't mind, I'm going to stand down here one side, make it a little bit easier for me to look at the slide, and I'll try not to fall down the stairs and break my neck here. These are key economic points that you always see in the paper. GDP, gross domestic product, investment, business inventories, government spending. What does all this mean? How can you use it? Well, let's take investment, non-residential. It's really a key factor in the economy. So, if you're going to look at investment, non-residential, you'll see these numbers come out periodically. If these numbers are moving up, that's good. You got industrial production, capacity utilization, all the way down to inventories. Let's look at industrial production. Why? Because it's on top of the list and I have an arrow beside it. If you look at the numbers, and I'm not saying you have to go home and start becoming a PhD economist. What I'm pointing out to you is this is in the paper every day. It's done by CNN News. It's done by Fox News, maybe. And it's done by all the internet providers of information. The point you want to do is you want to think for yourself. Yeah, this is where you start. Think for yourself. Don't listen to the headlines. Because they have one job and one job only, and that's to get your attention. And then they go on with how the world's coming apart. Because you see, there's nobody's going to sit there and listen, hey, life's good, sky's blue, everything's cool. No, that doesn't get readers, that doesn't get viewers. The world's coming apart, gigantic earthquakes, end of the world, that gets viewers. I got to see this, how the world's coming to an end. I got to learn about this. Okay, industrial production. January through June, what do you see? 100 down to 95. Not good. Third quarter 2009, what do you see? Down to December's projected, came out, increasing numbers. Increasing numbers. The economy is improving. As my dad always told me when I was growing up, you don't move the Queen Mary on a dime. You aren't going to move our economy on a dime. It's going to take time. It is improving. The world as we know it is not coming apart. Well, not if Congress will take a vacation. GDP, for those of you who read my column this morning, I had some comments about our friends in Washington. GDP, another key element. GDP has been increasing. This is what it's looked like. These were the bad days. Okay? This was the good days. This is where we started fighting the wars. You can see what happened. Okay? But this is good, and this has been improving. And it will continue to improve. We had first cut of fourth quarter, and by the way, many economic numbers are redone three times. The first number is a gross cut at it. The third number is a definite number. Don't always get too excited about the first number because it's subject to change. But the growth for the fourth quarter on the first cut was the highest we've seen in a number of years, 5.7%. Now, a little footnote to put in the back of your minds. We're sitting with a 9.7% unemployment rate. Every percentage point to reduce unemployment by one percentage point requires a 2% growth in GDP. Hawkins' rule. It's more or less correct. Two gets you one. If we want to go from, let's use 10 to 7, that's 3 percentage points, you need a 6% annual growth rate in gross domestic product. Not one quarter, you need a full year. It's not going to happen, unfortunately. Consumer credit, I'll make this real quick. Consumer credit, there's a couple of different types of consumer credit. The one that's causing the problems is there's two things causing problems. One is credit card debt. People view credit card as found money. What's even worse is home equity loans. You remember the old days, the banks were advertising, oh, your house is a piggy bank. Come on, buy yourself a second home, buy yourself a new car, take a vacation, send your kids to college. That was a good part of it. The rest of it is pure consumption. See, in those days, it wasn't a home equity loan when I was growing up. It was called second mortgage, which you took out when you were desperate. But the banks led you to believe that mortgage home prices only go one way, up. I learned something else from my daddy. What goes up comes down. He said, I want you to make me three promises. One, you never sell short. Two, you never speculate in commodities. And three, you never mortgage your home. I've kept all three. Well, not quite. I have speculated in commodities, but don't tell anybody. And he's passed on, so he'll never know. Oh, excuse me. Okay. Revolving credit, these are credit cards. You can see they've been decreasing. Hold on, excuse me. I thought I had this turned off. Ignore, shut up, go away. Okay. This goes on all day long. Okay, you can see that's decreasing. So is my time. Okay, jobless claims, non-farm payrolls, and unemployment, this is critical. Unemployment is coming down. It was 10.2%, then it was 10%, now it's 9.7. We need to get down to 7%. Are we doing it? Well, cardboard is still the thing, and will be for a while. However, you can look at the lines. Things aren't, unemployment is the green. Average work week hours have been increasing. This chart's about a month out of date now. Hours have been increasing. Unemployment's been decreasing. These are good things. We got to keep it going. Jobless claims, they've been coming down, although they were up this morning. Okay. Non-farm payrolls fell by 85,000. They were down to 2,000 a day. That's not bad. Inflation. But I don't mean to go fast so rapidly over those other numbers, but I'm running out of time here. So I got a lot of slides to go. Inflation. There is no inflation. If your broker has been telling you there's inflation, if your financial advisor has been telling you there's inflation, or the media has been telling you, hey, what Obama's doing is going to create tremendous inflation. What the Fed's doing is going to create tremendous inflation. No, it's not. And I can show you the numbers. It's not. What's happening right now is the Fed is doing what it has to do. The Treasury Department is doing what it has to do. And inflation is pretty well bottled up. Will inflation come back? Absolutely. We have a, if you want to call it, standard inflation rate of about 3%. That's the natural inflation rate. You have to have some inflation in a growing economy. Sometime, if you want, come by my office. I'll take you through all the gruesome details as to why. Okay, but the consumer price index and the consumer price index, those are the two numbers you want to look at, and they have been very tame. This is the producer price index. That's the consumer price index. We do not have inflation in the economy right now. It's running at about 2.1-2.2%. Now people say, well, my drug prices have gone up. Yeah, well, that's a different issue, folks. We can get in that one later. Food prices have been going up. Yeah, food is volatile. And I will tell you, there's two inflation numbers. One is without food and energy, because they're volatile, they call that the core, and then you got the full. I never quite understood that, because for the last time I checked, everybody in this room needs to eat and needs to keep warm, needs to drive a car, but that's how they do it. Nonetheless, if you look at both numbers, it's still okay. That's the annual inflation rate from 2000 through 2009. You can see we don't have any major problems. Are certain things going up? Yes. I have forecasted. I will stand here and forecast again. The price of crude oil will be $100 a barrel by the end of this year. Gasoline prices will be over $3 a gallon. I know that hurts. There's a lot of reasons why this is going to happen. Some people say a lot of reasons why it's not going to happen, but we're going to eat up. We built up some inventories. Crude prices, unfortunately, are speculative. There was a tremendous drop in the price of crude oil yesterday, 5%. It had nothing to do with demand. A large hedge fund unwound a position. Is this right? It's legal, folks. I'll stay away from whether it's right or not. But gasoline's going up. Why? Because the cost to refine a gallon of gasoline is going up, and the refiners closed down some of their major refineries because they were shipping out dollars with every gallon of gas. At $3 a gallon, $3.50 a gallon, they can make money. Actions by the Federal Reserve. This is one of the greatest spanking babies around. Everybody wants to hit on the Federal Reserve. It's not perfect. However, Ben Bernanke is a pretty damn good economist. He really is. When he took the job, he was in the same position that Barack Obama was. Neither of them had any idea what they were walking into. They didn't. Ben Bernanke, it was an economist out of Princeton University. He is what's called a Depression Era economist. I have his books, I have his papers, I have read them. He understood what went wrong in 1929 through 1939. You see, we actually didn't come out of the Depression of 29 until World War II. Why did we come out in World War II? It's very simple. The government put a tremendous amount of money into the economy. See, we had Riveter Sally, or whatever her name was. Rosie the Riveter, excuse me, yeah. I was not born, Joe. I was born after the war. 2 days after the war. you say, well, look at the money we're spending on the wars now. One big difference. We're not putting that money into our economy. We're putting it into their economy. We're building up their economy. There being Iraq, there is being Pakistan, there is being Afghanistan. Now, if they appreciated it, I might be able to go along with it. But they don't, but the biggest problem is we can't afford it. If your kids come to you and they say, hey, I want to go to college. I need a loan of $25,000 for the first semester. I put my daughter through vet school. After all the help I gave her, she came out owing $80,000. But you haven't got the money. What do you tell your kids? I'm sorry, you're going to have to get a job, you have to get a loan, you're going to have to get a scholarship, you have to do something. But you see, we're running the printing press, essentially, for the countries abroad. And that's where the problem. Now, if you want to fight the war, I got a very easy solution. War tax. That will solve it. War tax. I've been promoting a war tax for a year. But you can see Congress is not waiting at my front door when I go home. Alan Greenspan, I covered him briefly. I'll cover him again. He kept money too low. He saw the housing bubble. He did not act. He was what's called a neoclassical economist. He didn't understand how the world works correctly, in my opinion. And those are about 35 other economists I could give you the names of. Ben Bernanke, he knew what went wrong in 29. He walked into the job and understand that for an economist, being chief of the Federal Reserve is the pinnacle of positions. But he didn't really understand the magnitude. To give you an example, he was told that house prices are going to come down. He said, no. They've been telling me that since I bought my first house in California. He didn't believe it either. He was also drinking the Kool-Aid. It's time to raise rates. This is a cover of Barron's about 2 months ago, 3 months ago now. It's not time to raise rates. That's the worst thing you could do would be to raise interest rates. Interest rates need to stay exactly, they can't come down any lower, they need to stay exactly where they are. For those of you, if any have economic training, there's something called a liquidity gap, for better terminology, for the exact terminology. We're not really in that problem. We're not facing the same problems that Japan faced. Why do people want to raise interest rates? You're going to hear on a certain news channel some of this type of talk. There's an obsessive fear of inflation. Take that out of your mind. There is no inflation right now. Nothing to worry about in terms of inflation. Opposition to easy credit despite a desperate need. We need credit, not so much for the individual, but the small businessman, the guy who makes under $500,000 or $2 million, $2 million a year, he needs to be able to fund his inventory. He needs to be able to fund his payroll temporarily that he gets paid. He needs to be able to factor his receivables. He can't do that right now. Banks aren't lending. banks are getting money, and the mayor sure was having the money, but they're not lending it. Government should not create jobs because it'll only be an artificial recovery. I'll tell you what, you tell a guy on Main Street USA who is facing foreclosure, has lost his job, can't afford his car payments, and can't feed his kids, but all of a sudden gets a job because of an artificial recovery, and you ask him if he cares. He wants to know, where do I go to work? When do I get paid? He probably can't even spell artificial and doesn't care. 1930s, this is what went wrong. We raised interest rates and we slashed spending. The two worst things you can do, and there's virtually every economist in the country will tell you this. There are very few holdouts anymore. Raising interest does not make sense for now. Will interest rates go up? Yes, they will. My forecast, they will go up in approximately a year. For those of you who are holding bonds, when they go up, you know what happens to your bond prices? They're coming down. Rhetorical question. Unemployment rate is 10%. When I did this slide, it's now 9.7. Inflation is running well below the long-term target. The Fed's target is under 3%. Reserves. Why aren't the banks loaning? Here's why. Banks are required to keep mandatory reserves with the Federal Reserve. They can take excess reserves and keep those with the Federal Reserve too if they want. And that's what they've been doing. The Fed's been saying, hey, I'm buying your bonds, I'm buying the mortgage securities that you're holding, and I'm giving you the cash. The hope was this cash goes out in the economy. And this is why the money supply is not increasing either, and this is why we don't have any inflation, but this is why we're not going back to work either. And the reason is the banks are taking those reserves and they're putting them back at the Fed, and they're getting interest on them, and it's risk-free, and it increases their capital. Win, 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 win. Lose, 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 lose. This is what's happened to excess reserves. You can see along here and then this, and it's gone up even higher. It's up in here right now. That's a major problem. Suggestion, if they would stop paying interest in those reserves, it'd be great. It's a possibility coming up. Money supply. Everybody says the money supply is getting out of hand. The Fed's just dumping money in the economy. I'll make it real simple. 2009. M2, which is a major, there's M1, M2, don't worry about the details. M2 is the overall broad measure of the money supply. 3.1% in 2009. Does that sound like they're dumping money in the economy? By the way, you have to grow the money supply if you're going to increase demand. Some of these are just basic rules of economics that have been proven out time and time again.
M3.
They don't publish M3 anymore.
The government's turned it off.
They haven't published M3 since 1998. I know what you want to do. I'm not going there. I'm not starting an argument. If you want to come by my office, I have boxing gloves. Pick your weapon. I got swords. I'll be happy to go round with you. Anytime, anybody, I stand open. I used to carry my car in case people want to do it in the parking lot. I've had these arguments. Sometimes I write stuff and Diane, my better half, looks outside the window to see if there's white sheets and burning crosses. I don't care. Tax break. The tax break that was done during the Bush administration is coming up for renewal. Hopefully it will not be renewed. Will it increase your taxes? A little bit, yes it will. Bite the bullet. But let me show you what happened with the tax break. I didn't make up any of these numbers. Not in my worst nightmare could I do that. Look at this. The top 1% received 23.5% of the tax break. The top 1% makes over $545,845. Now, don't anybody take offense, but if I look around the room, I don't think there's Rolls Royces parked in that parking lot. Could be wrong. One of you could be a multimillionaire in hiding. In case you won. 12.7% got the next category. Let's go back up here. The lowest quintile, people who are making less than $18,000. These are the ones who need tax breaks. These are the ones who need help. What did they get? They got 1.3% of the tax break. 1.3%. Now you tell me I'm nuts. You see why I write and talk? This is not right. This is not justified. This helps out people like the head of Goldman Sachs, who is rumored, if you saw my column today, to receive a $100 million bonus after taking $10 billion in TARP money, $12.9 billion from the insurance company, AIG. I'm sorry, I'm getting old, you know, the brain's going. $12.9 billion from AIG, and for a little sugar on the cake, we, the taxpayer, guaranteed their borrowings that don't expire until the end of next year.
He's smart enough to engineer that, doesn't he deserve a bonus?
No. Man has a very valid point. If you're smart enough to do all that, you deserve a bonus. We're suckers, okay? AIG was bailed out for a very specific reason. If they had not been bailed out, the way the economy was, the way nerves were, the way things were going, there was a chance that the insurance industry could topple. AIG, the part that caused the problems, is a very small part of the insurance company. AIG also insures aircraft, homes, cars, businesses, commercial buildings, lives. If they toppled, it could have brought down the other major, the MetLifes of the world, who's already got their own troubles, in case you haven't been reading the paper. We couldn't afford that to happen. The problem is, we didn't negotiate. We were in a panic mode. We did the one thing I've always told investors over and over again: never make a quick investment decision. Sit back and think about it for a little while. And I don't mean 10 minutes, I'm talking about days. There's no investment decision that you have to make instantaneously, and that applied for AIG too. In any case, this is where the tax program went. I like this slide, some people don't. This is what Obama inherited. Now, I don't care whether you're right, left, or in the middle, independent, Republican, or Democrat. When the current administration came in, they were faced with two problems. Lack of experience, can't hold that against them. There is no job training. I know it says, take this course, it's called President US 101. And we followed up with 102, after which you're qualified to be President of the United States. He walked into a quagmire that no other president for a long time has walked into. Bernanke was in the same position. There's no job that says Fed Chairman 101 that he takes in graduate school. He had the deficit and he had the national debt. Let's look at both of them real quickly. The deficit, it's got to come down. It's not going to come down this year. It's not going to come down next year. If we are good boys and girls, we will get it under control and we'll keep it to a reasonable number. Okay, national debt. It's not going away in your lifetime. It's not going away in my lifetime. It's not going away in your kids' lifetime. And it's not going away in their kids' lifetime. Now I got a question for you. So what? Does it impact your standard of living right now? Or theirs? No, it doesn't. Again, come down to my office, I'll give you facts, figures, and show you why. It takes me about 3 hours. Little slide for you, rather critical. assume 2.5% real growth and 2% inflation. Not totally unreasonable. By 2019, this equates to $4 trillion in revenue. So debt service costs, due to the next decade's deficits, would be less than 6% of revenue under current law. Bottom line, don't get excited. Well, people tell me there's some national debt and gross public debt. Remember, well, I can get into it. People say, well, you got China holding debt. China, by the way, holds 10% of our debt. And they're not going to do anything with it. We are their biggest trading partner. Do you take your biggest trading partner and shoot him in the foot? No. Secondly, suppose China wakes up tomorrow morning and says, I am dumping all my treasury securities. What do you think it does to the price? Right through the floor. So, I guess what? They're going to wake up, shoot their best trading partner in the foot, and then dump their stuff at 10 cents on the dollar. For what purpose? What do they gain? Euros? Anybody check euros this morning? Where do you think money goes when there's a crisis? Into the US dollars. Do you know why? Because you are sitting in the strongest, most stable economy in the world that the world has ever seen, and the dollar is indicative of that strength. And yes, there's big speculators who buy dollars, sell dollars, buy euros, sell euros, and that will fluctuate in price. And you got some countries like Greece and Spain and Portugal running into trouble because they don't know anything about managing their economies. That doesn't affect us. It doesn't. Nonetheless, the dollar is still a strong currency, and it always will be. It's been that way since I was in graduate school. I'm 65 years old, and it's still that way. So I'm going to make a forecast. When I leave this earth, it's still going to be strong. Deficits, I don't want to go on. Ah, yes. Something that should be near and dear to your hearts. Healthcare. I'm only going to give you two words on it. Why are you bothering, Lauren? I'm glad you asked that question. I'm a recovered cancer patient. 8 years ago, I had cancer. For 8 years, I have not been able to buy health insurance. I don't care how much money. I turned 65 on April. I qualify for Medicare, a government-sponsored health care program, without which I would not have any health insurance. This is why I get a little excited when I see what happens in the Senate, and I write about it, because I can testify to it personally. Bailouts. I think I've covered this a little bit. The reason for the bailout was that people panicked. We had to do something. The economy was losing money rapidly. It was in real danger. It was wrong, perhaps, but it was legal. Keep in mind that the investment banks, the banks as they are now, and the hedge funds, they basically operate legally. There is one case of Galileo, which insider trading, no argument. That's rare. These guys operate legally. You may not like it, you may be morally against it, but they're legal. They do not operate for the common good. Let's get that straight. They never have and they never will.
Does this translate into more government regulation?
Absolutely. If we do not, look, I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm not given for mincing words. Government regulation, religion, they all serve the same purpose. They keep human beings between the lines, within the boundaries. This is a good aspect of religion, It's a good aspect of government regulation. If you do not put government regulation, we took away Glass-Steagall, we took away, there was a meeting of Christopher Cox and the five major investment banks that took place. I can't remember the date, I wrote about it. The meeting lasted 20 minutes. And in that meeting, which Mr. Paulson, by the way, was CEO at that time of Goldman Sachs, they said, look, you know, if we remove these capital requirements and bring them way down, we can lend out a lot more money, we can do a lot more with homeowners, and we can make a lot more money. Christopher Cox, who was then head of the SEC, said, that's great. Go ahead and do it. End of meeting. Took place in the basement of the SEC building. It's all documented. Now you wonder why we have problems. We need increased government regulation. I know there are people in certain parties who are totally opposed to this. They have a neoclassical view of the world. Things go to full employment automatically. You should have minimum government, no interference, no monetary policy. You can take it down to Ron Paul, get rid of the Fed. Come down to my office. Pick your weapons. Need for additional regulation has been recognized by everybody. Is it going to get passed? No. No, it's not going to get passed. You see, you got one group, it's daylight. No, it's nighttime. Oh, it's nighttime. No, it's daytime. Nothing's getting done. Absolutely nothing. I like this. Remember that It's a Wonderful Life? I quote, not exactly, George, forgot to tell you, I sold their loans to a hedge fund. They got bundled with a bunch of risky mortgages, panned off on unwitting investors in Asian countries. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Been asleep for 7.5 years. Anything I missed? Yeah, a little bit. Wall Street came apart to seams. Banks. Are they doing well? Well, it depends on how you want to look at it. Yeah. Some of them are doing well, some are not doing so well. Citigroup will never do well. I used to think General Motors was the worst run company in the United States. I wrote that for several years. No offense, anybody used to work for General Motors. I took General Motors off the list, put Citigroup up there. Bank America, I like the bank. I know the bank. This thing with Merrill Lynch is a disaster, no argument. They deserve the fines they got. And it's not, the saga's not quite over yet. Goldman Sachs, for those of you who are religious, you might like this. It seems the world, Lord works in mysterious ways. Goldman Sachs Group Chief Executive Lloyd Blankenfein said, Wall Street's most successful bank was doing God's work. Where is it written in the scriptures, you shall get $100 million bonus? I must have been number 11 on the tablets. Use the verb sack as looting and pillaging in a sentence, Goldman Sachs. Now, in case you think I am being too hard on Wall Street, let me give you some background. My dad spent his entire life on Wall Street. My cousins had 13 seats in the New York Stock Exchange. When I grew up, some kids got C-Spot Run. I got the S&P Stock Guide. I still have in my bookshelf the first book I got on investing or on a stock exchange, essentially. It's dated 1955. I was 10 years old. I made my first investment a year later. And I've been doing it ever since. I grew up on Wall Street. It's been my entire life. I think the disservice they've done to Main Street USIA is inconscionable. And that's why I write. The dollar. Everybody tells me the dollar is going you know where. It's not. I covered this already. There's nothing wrong with the dollar. By the way, those of you worried about China, keep one thing in mind. You heard this thing about the wall board, the defective wall board. They sent us defective wall board. We gave them cheap dollars. We're even. Here's a little investment stuff. If you don't want this, I'll tune it out, or I guess answer questions, but here's a little thing you might be interested in. Here's the dollar index right here. Here's the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It doesn't look like Wall Street's too worried, does it? The down the dollar, same thing. Dollar is the yellow, dollar is the yellow line. And Dow is the blue line. Wall Street's not getting excited, why should you? Oh, they're giving away cheap dollars. You know, this is Halloween. Falling dollars, good news, I've covered most of this. It's a result of rising confidence. When the world gets in trouble, they go for the dollar. The dollar rose the heights of the financial crisis because panic investors sought out a safe haven. The dollar's falling now because fear is subsiding. Well, that was until yesterday. Okay, I will run through some slides real briefly. For those of you, my specialty is not, well, I'm an economist by training. I'm a chief economist for the firm, but Wall Street's my game. It's what I do. I'm a professional money manager. So I'm going to give you just a couple of things about Wall Street real quick. Just, you like that? Okay, many of you go into these things called various types of mutual funds. This is some annual returns of mutual funds. For the record, since I've already irritated most of you already, I hate mutual funds. I despise them. They're the worst thing that's been brought on the investing public. They make a great deal of money for the portfolio managers, and you get screwed once again. Okay, between October 2007 and March 2009, the S&P lost 55% of its value. By the way, you may have noticed the market's been down a little bit recently, in the last couple days. Nearly one in four investors aged 56 to 65 had more than 90% in equities going forward. In the 3 months following the bottom in March, the S&P rebounded by 50%. To break even, you need another 50% gain. Here we are, February 1st, and guess what? You're in negative territory for the year. Between 1883, this is going back a ways, and 2008, the stock market averaged 7.6% return after inflation each year. You can beat that. For those of you having little problems getting by, you can beat it. I am not pushing any firm, any stock here, don't worry. There are five ways to lose money on Wall Street. Denial, the trend's not real. Well, it depends which way the trend's going. Skepticism is too risky. What's risky? Risky is when you can't sleep at night. Bargaining, I'll invest if the price is right. Well, somebody please tell me when the price is right. Regret, oh God, I missed it. And panic, I gotta buy in. That's the worst one. That will always cost you money. Is it the right time to invest? Well, depends on which way you want to look at it. Another cover from Barron's. One day I'm going to get sued for these cartoons and these covers. I mean, I forgot to ask people for permission. Better to apologize than to... I personally have been a bull on Wall Street my entire life. I'm still a bull. I still believe in it. I think stock's the only way to make money or increase your wealth. And that I firmly believe in. I've always believed in it, and I will believe in it to the day I die. Time for stocks? Well, those of you my age, you might recognize this. If you don't recognize it, you're too young. You shouldn't be here. Here's a key point. I'm going to go through these slides quickly, but here's a key point. S&P 500, from 2000 to the end of 2009, you started off with $100,000. You ended with $50,000. Nice. Nice returns. You lost half your money. If you had a allocated portfolio, and I'm not going through all the details here, but if you had an allocated portfolio, you could have had $250,000. Those of you who say, hey, buy the S&P 500 index and hold it for 10 years, be my guest. Be my guest. But I hope you don't need your money. See this slide? See this right here, stocks, fixed income. Screw that decision up and you're ruined. This is the most important decision there is. I did not believe this. 4 years ago, I didn't believe it. Not only do I believe it now, but when this came to my attention through my current partner, I went back because academics are what I do, and I got all the studies from the universities. These are financial economic studies by professors who have no leg in Wall Street. They're just doing it academically. A lot of mathematics, a lot of statistics. You know what I found? 90 to 95% of the return on a portfolio comes with this decision. Anybody wants a bibliography, call me. I'll be happy to ship it to you. I warn you, it's heavy math. Then you start making these decisions. The problem is, where most of you go, you start worrying about this part. That's the last decision you should make. It's just a free tip, you can use it or not, but you want to decide equities, fixed income, then you can do this, then you can do this. But if anybody wants a copy of these slides, you can either email me or Klaus, do you, I don't know how you all do it, but you can always email me. If you don't know my email address, get a copy of the newspaper. It costs you 75 cents for my column, and I give you the whole rest of the paper for free, including the comics. Growth investing, I'm not going through all this. Here's another little quick tip for you. For those of you who don't want to worry about your portfolio, you want to spend 15 minutes per year on your portfolio and then put it out of your mind, you might give this some thought. Something called the Dow's the dog, Dow 5 theory. You probably heard it by number of names. I just thought I'd show you real quick a result. What you do is you take the highest yielding, the 10 highest yielding of the Dow 30 stocks, okay? And as of December 31st of 2009, January 4, these were the highest yielding of the Dow 30 stocks. Okay, you then, there they are. You take the five cheapest. So you sort it out by yield, and then you take the five cheapest. And this is what it came out to on December 31st, 2009. These were the five cheapest. And they had a yield of 4.5%. Well, how did they do? How did they do in 2009? Let me cut to the quick. Total return, 27.72%. S&P 500, 27.9. You say to me, hey, Lauren, but I could have just bought the S&P 500 index. Yeah, you could have. I teach investment classes. I go through and I show people how the 5, 10, and 15-year returns have done. They average about 37%. Does it work every year? No. 2008, we had a small problem. One of the Dow 5 was General Motors. Another one was General Electric. Well, that hurt things, but then everything else got hurt too. I'm not putting this out as a way to invest. I'm showing you, you don't need high-paid portfolio managers. This game of investing, increasing your wealth, having a comfortable retirement, it's not that difficult. Warren Buffett said, and I agree wholeheartedly, if you have an IQ over 25, you can manage your portfolio. I think everybody in this room has an IQ over 25. Gold. It's getting down to the last topics here, folks. Gold, 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 gold. We need to buy gold. You should buy gold. When I was in graduate school, I said to my professor, why do people buy gold? He said, I don't know, Lauren. He said, it doesn't pay interest. You can't eat it. It's hard to sell if you own it. I'm talking about holding bullion now. You know why it's hard to sell? People scrape. Oh, you didn't think about that, did you? No, you can't go home and do it. It's illegal. They scrape a little bit off, and then you have to take it and have it reweighed. Hey, it goes back to the early days when they had gold coins. People scraped a little off. Gold coins got thinner and thinner. If one human being could do something, somebody else can find a way to get around the fence, believe me. All right. Let me give you one other little quick statistic. Go back to the 80s. Gold was twice as high in price as it is today. It's come down 50%. Most people don't realize that if you adjust for inflation. Yeah, interesting. And by the way, gold hit it was down $1,200 yesterday. It hit a nice low. Okay, here's some suggested readings. You can get these if you get a copy of my slides. There's two books on here I highly, highly recommend. One I already covered. That one was The Return of the Master. These books, by the way, are both on the... You can buy them in Barnes & Noble. These are not textbooks. These are designed for the average individual. Return of the Master. This guy has written a three-volume biography of Keynes. He's an expert in the subject. It's a very well-respected book. This book you have to read. You have to read this. $3 trillion war. If this doesn't keep you up at night, nothing will. This shows how tragic the wars are that we fought, not just in monetary terms, in terms of human life, in terms of destruction to our economy, in terms of destruction to other economies. This is written by Joseph Stiglitz. I covered him in detail in my economics class yesterday. He's a well-known economist. He's a Nobel Prize winner. The book is easy reading. I suggest you read it when you haven't eaten for a while because you're going to throw up. I told you I didn't mince words. Okay, if you need help, you can email me. My email address is right there. It's also in the newspaper every week. Including my phone number is in there too. You're welcome to call me. Please use email if you can. I get 200 to 300 email messages every day. I get dozens of phone calls, and I have a speaking schedule that's going to kill me one day. The slides, I'll put the slides on my website. You can pull them off. It'll have the name of Free Thinkers on it. And I sure hope you stick to that name, by the way. RuddReport.com is my personal website. It has all my columns on it. The column you read on Friday will be in the website Monday evening. The reason being is most papers run it on Sunday, and I don't want to front run anybody. Some papers run it on Mondays, a couple on Tuesday, but too bad for them. It goes on my website every Monday.